And now for reading and writing and radio.
I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd banish us, you know. How dreary to be somebody. How public, like a frog, to tell your name the livelong day to an admiring bog.
That poem was by the American poet Emily Dickinson, but you can write poems too.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Today I have here with me in the studio Ginny Davenport. And Ginny is my friend, and she's also a fine actress. She played the role of Emily Dickinson, the poet, in a one-person production at Sangamon State University called The Belle of Amherst. Ginny was the only person on stage from start to finish. Ginny, we're glad you're here, and why don't you tell us first something about Emily Dickinson, who she was, when she lived, how she wrote, and then we'll hear you read some of her poems, okay?
All right, thank you, Jackie. Well, it's hard to separate out the poems, for they're interspersed with throughout the play, just as they were interspersed throughout Emily's life.
Okay.
Well, let's see. She lived from 1830 to 1886, so she died just a little over 100 years ago.
So she wasn't too old?
No, nope, just 56.
56, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she lived in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Why don't you be Emily for us a little bit? Ginny, as you were in the play.
Oh, all right. People find it hard to believe that I had a normal childhood. They visualize instead a miniature version of me as I am now, a pint-sized little Emily, dressed all in white, lisping riddles and aphorisms and baby talk, and, of course, hiding from the family. I guess I'm to blame for that false impression. Actually, at 15, I was a very typical Amherst girl. I went to dances. I giggled my way through classes, quilting bees, and scores of parties. I was trying very hard to believe I was a ravishing beauty. I was infatuated with one dashing young man after another. Unfortunately, they didn't know it. If they did, they were smarter than I gave them credit for. And I sent valentines and Christmas cards and all the things that young girls do.
Emily, when did you start writing poetry, and why?
Well, it's hard to say. I guess about 15 or 16, but all my life, words have been my life. I look at words as if they are entities, sacred beings. Why, they're words to which I lift my hat when I see them sitting on a page. Sometimes I write one, circumference, and I look at its outlines until it starts to glow brighter than any sapphire. I hesitate which word to take when I write a poem. A poet can choose but a few words, and they have to be the chiefest words, the best words. A word is dead when it is said, some say. I say it just begins to live that day. Oh, if I read Keats, Shelley, Shakespeare, Mrs. Browning, Emily Bronte, oh, what an afternoon for heaven when Bronte entered there. And they make my whole body so cold no fire can ever warm me. I know that is poetry. Have you ever felt that way? And if I feel physically as if the top of my head were taken off, I know that's poetry. These are the only ways I know it. Is there any other way?
And then in the play, you spoke directly to the audience at that point, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And I said to them, do you know that every one of you is to me a poem, you and you, each one a rare creation. I suppose that's why I love you and you love me, whether we realize it or not. Oh, I discovered that secret a long time ago about the souls of people. And I thought that being a poem oneself precluded the writing of poems. But I saw my mistake. The poet lights the lamp and then goes out himself. But the light goes on and on. Essences are marked for... No. That's not the best word. Labeled. That's better. Essences are labeled for immortality. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain.
Tell us something about your family.
Well, I had a father and a mother, a sister Vinnie, and a brother Austin. And we all lived together like friendly and absolute monarchs here at Homestead, our home, each in our own domain.
Did your family like your poems?
Well, you know, they really didn't pay very much attention. And, in fact, I don't remember my father or any of them reading any of my poems. Father, he was so proper, very demanding, inflexible. That's why any show of leniency or understanding on his part would disarm us completely. You know, I remembered when he discovered I was writing until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Would you act that part for us, Ginny?
All right. Oh, but Father, I thought you were asleep. No, I didn't notice the time. 2 o'clock? Oh, is it that late? But this is the only time the house is quiet, Father. Except for Vinnie. She snores like a poker and shovel and pair of tongs. Oh, yes, Father, I know you have a rule about early rising, but I haven't missed one morning, have I? Tired? I do? Well, I was writing. Yes. Good night, Father. Oh, just a poem, Father. Now? Out loud? To make a prairie, a prairie, Father. To make a prairie, it takes a clover and one bee. One clover and a bee and reverie. The reverie alone will do if bees are few. Oh, another one? Oh, yes, Father, I do. I'll tell you how the sun rose, a ribbon at a time. The steeple swam in amethyst. The news like squirrels ran. The hills untied their bonnets. The bobolinks begun. Then I said softly to myself, that must have been the sun. But how he said, I know not. There seemed a purple stile that little yellow boys and girls were climbing all the while, till when they reached the other side, a dominie in gray put gently up the evening bars and led the flock away. Oh, cancel the rule for me? Then I can sleep late in the morning? Oh, thank you, Father.
That's a very nice scene. The end of that poem there, the dominie in gray, that's a word for a kind of teacher, a school teacher that is gathering those little yellow girls and boys that are the day and taking them over the pasture bars and closing them up for the night. Very nice image. So tell me, today, you are one of the best known and best loved and most respected poets in the world. Were you then? Were you published? Did the world know about you?
Oh,
when you were alive?
Oh, dear. At one point in my life, I had high hopes of being published. In the April issue of the Atlantic Monthly, 1862, an article appeared inviting young writers to submit their work. Charge your style with life, said the author. Well, this is what I was waiting for. And Austin's wife, my brother's wife, Sue, agreed with me. And we spent days trying to find just the right poems to send. But Sue thought Father would disapprove. No, I said, he'll approve soon enough when my poems bring honor to his name. But, oh dear, The editor sent the poems back. He said that my meter was too experimental, spasmodic, and uncontrolled. Oh, I was just so disappointed. Oh,
and what about your rhyme? Didn't he dislike your rhyme, too?
Yes, he felt it was uncontrolled.
That it didn't rhyme always.
No, no, it didn't. He didn't like that.
So then what did you do?
Well, I kept sending him poems anyway. You know, I just had an urge to write, and why, I must have written at least a poem every day. And then I decided it didn't make any difference about publication. And I decided that publication is the auction of the mind of man. And I reached that conclusion, and I came to peace with it. Like the warbler that I found on a bush at the foot of the garden. Why sing, I said, since nobody hears? My business is to sing, and away it rose. Well, my business is to sing. What difference does it make if no one listens? Oh, perhaps you laugh at me. Perhaps the whole United States are laughing at me, too. I can't stop for that. Just to have been made alive is so chief a thing, all else inevitably adds. I find ecstasy in living. The mere sense of living is joy enough. Take all away from me, but leave me ecstasy.
Well, that's a lovely one, and to just keep on. My business is to sing, whether anyone listens or not. So your poems then were discovered after your death in a bureau drawer, as I understand, almost 2,000 of them.
That's right.
And it was only then that the world slowly began to recognize your genius. In fact, all of the poems have only finally been published about 30 years ago.
That's right.
I've got one here that I mentioned a week or two or three ago on Reading and Writing and Radio that I said we'd be reading in this program.
Oh, when well, I was, why don't you read it?
I was talking about adventuring, and I was saying that you could adventure with books, and that Emily Dickinson had a poem, and here is hers. The word frigate means a sailing vessel, a merchant vessel, and coursers are horses, usually, although in the St. Nicholas poem, the visit from St. Nicholas,
mm-hmm.
It's coursers are the reindeer there that are pulling the sleigh. So, and the final word that I need to mention is frugal. Usually, when we say frugal, we mean stingy, but here it means inexpensive, how inexpensive it is. So here's the poem. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul.
Oh, that's nice.
It's inexpensive to read and to go on those adventures.
Yes.
Do you have one that you'd like to read?
Well, yes. I'd like to read about a train.
All right.
Because I like to see it lap the miles and lick the valleys up and stop to feed itself at tanks and then prodigious step around a pile of mountains and supercilious pier and shanties by the sides of roads, and then a quarry pier to fit its sides and crawl between, complaining all the while in horrid hooting stanza, then chase itself downhill, and neigh like Boanerges, then, punctual as a star, stop, docile and omnipotent at its own stable door.
All the way through, that's comparing a train or writing about the train as if it were a living creature, crawling through the hills and hooting and roaring and lapping the miles and so forth, and ending up at the stable door like a horse right on time. Trains were relatively new at that time.
That's right.
This was a new and exciting thing to have the train be coming up to the town of Amherst where Emily was listening to its train sounds and seeing it come. Well, our time is getting a little bit short. Why don't I give us a few thoughts about writing for what you kids listening in are going to be doing, okay? We'd like you to try some poems. Emily Dickinson says, a poet can choose but few words and they have to be the chiefest words, the best words. So what we'd like you to try is to paint some pictures. Paint a picture with some vivid words. Don't be content with the first thing that you write down. There may be better and more exact words. And some of Emily Dickinson's poems rhymed, and some of them didn't. But don't try to make a rhyme, because usually when you drag in a rhyme in order to make it rhyme with something else, it distorts a poem. A wrong word gets stuck in, and it doesn't come out right. It isn't saying what you want it to say. I don't want to dictate subjects to you, but sometimes it's easier to have some suggestions, something to start to work with. You might try weather. Everybody talks about it. We could write about it, and this is a changeable season when you're going to be listening to this program. It could be rain, it could be sleet, it could be snow, it could be sunshine, it could almost be barefoot weather. Who knows? I'd like Ginny and me maybe to read a couple of poems here that some children have written on weather. These are some Minnesota children that have been written by in a workshop with a friend of mine, and I was going through her little book here. Here's one called Pockets of Sunshine. A curtain of rain reaches out to touch us. We peel down the sunshine and put it in our pockets for a while. Reflections glorify the puddles. Mist surrounds apples on old trees. That's by a sixth grader.
You could just see those pictures, can't you?
Yes, and here's another one by a sixth grader. Want to read that one?
All right. I speak the language of a spider on the dewy ground. I speak the language of a butterfly in the misty air. I speak the language of the damp, wet earth.
Here's one by an eighth grader. When the cars run over the rain, it slaps the sidewalk. Here's one by a 10-year-old. Did I say an eighth grader? I meant an 8-year-old. And here's one by a 10-year-old.
When the rain came down in the dark day, it came down like little bells tinkling. It clattered like little rocks. Can't you hear it?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here's another one. Loosen, this is to the wind, loosen the knot of birds. Don't ruffle the leaves, don't rattle the trees, don't blow over the bikes. Fold the rainbow neatly. That's a fourth grader. Try another one or two here to give you some thoughts on how these children have written and have thought of such exact words. Here's one called April, and this one was written by a whole sixth grade class together.
Oh, that's interesting. All winter long, I have kept the trees in the broom closet. Now robins announce the rain. Restless, the trees scratch at the locked door. This key of thunder lets them out to sweep the open sky.
Why don't we finish up, Ginny, with having you read the last poem that you had there of Emily Dickinson's. The one that I like so much about the bees, yes.
All right. The pedigree of honey does not concern the bee. A clover any time to him is aristocracy.
So today, kids, let's get in some poems on anything, really. But if you can't think of something, begin thinking about the weather. So thank you, Ginny. Emily Dickinson, the Belle of Amherst.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, children.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.